You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another edition of what Snail is calling A Mile in Kyle's Shoes, and what I am still trying to figure out is, with this being our second episode, what kind of shoes does Kyle Dubas actually wear, if he wears shoes at all? He could be walking around PPG Paints Arena or the Cranberry Performance Center. He could be walking around barefoot. We just have no way of knowing. So until we find that answer, we are back with another episode of A Mile in Kyle's Shoes. We're going to talk about some fun hypothetical scenarios that Snail has given me, just me this week. Gareth Bahana, Robbie is unavailable, so it's just Snail and I talking about some fun hypotheticals here. With that said, Snail, I will turn it over to you as we continue to try and figure out what kind of shoes Kyle Dubas actually wears.
Dude, the thought of him walking around PPG Paints in bare feet is just like so disturbing to me. Could you imagine like you're in the, like you're using like the bathroom and the stall next to you, you just see bare feet and you go to wash your hands and Kyle walks out and kind of like pops his collar and washes his hands.
It is kind of like, trust me, I have no doubt that like the sanitation and the janitorial staff at PPG Paints Arena are wonderful people, but it is quite disgusting when you sit down and like, now that those words have come out of my mouth, I have to sit with them and think about them. Imagine Kyle Dubas walking out of a men's room location in PPG and just bare feet. Like he has business attire on, or he's wearing a polo and slacks and, you know, his trademark glasses and spiked up hair. Everything is like traditional Kyle Dubas, but he's just in bare feet all the time. It is quite disgusting once you sit down and think about it.
Super disturbing. Well, let's try to move past that. I'm going to have a hard time getting that out of my head now. But I come with you with some hypotheticals here. So Garrett, let's dive right into this. Garrett, you are Kyle Dubas. You receive a phone call from none other than general manager Jim Rutherford, and he wants to make a deal with Pittsburgh before the season starts. He offers you one of Brock Besser, Connor Garland, or Andre Kuzmenko for Brian Rust. Are you A, making a deal with JR, B, not making a deal with JR, or C, are you maybe renegotiating?
I am open to this deal because Brian Rust is, what, 31 years old? I was not against giving Brian Rust that contract when he was when it was due. The same with Letang, the same with Malkin, the same will be said for Sidney Crosby and Jake Guentzel when the time comes, and Ricard Raquel for that matter. I was not against giving Brian Rust a long-term deal here in Pittsburgh. I thought he was going to go to Detroit. He ended up staying here. But in this hypothetical, Jim Rutherford wants Brian Rust back in Vancouver. Brock Besser, Connor Garland, or Kuzmenko? I am not going to renegotiate, and I am not accepting the deal. So I will look at one of these three players, Kuzmenko, Garland, and Besser. And I was doing some research before we started recording. Kuzmenko has a two-year deal. He signed a two-year deal with a modified no-trade clause, a cap hit of $5.5 million through this season and next season. He's 27 years old, a right-handed winger. Last season with the Canucks, 81 games played, 39 goals, 35 assists, 74 points. Very, very, very good season for his first season in the NHL. I look at Connor Garland, and if you have been listening to this podcast for longer than, I'd say, 3 to 5 months, you know that when we were talking about the trade deadline earlier this year, that I was very much a fan of trading for Connor Garland if he was on the block. And to this day, as I sit here on September 8th, 2023, I am still in favor of acquiring Connor Garland. The 27-year-old right-handed winger has a cap hit of $4.95 million through the end of the 2025-26 season. So if you trade for Connor Garland tomorrow, you get him for this season, next season, and the season after for a cap hit under $5 million. And Garland can certainly put the puck in the back of the net with the Canucks last season, 2022-23, 81 games played, 17 goals, 29 assists, 46 points, 83 goals scored and 322 games played. I think he's a more than capable top nine, even potentially top six winger. And you put him alongside a Crosby or a Malkin, I could see those point totals shoot right up. Brock Besser, he doesn't really do much for me, and his cap hit is the largest out of the three here. He has a cap hit of 6.65 through this season and 2024-25. So I don't really need Besser. I don't really care for Besser. Connor Garland, out of the three you listed here, would be my preferred candidate. You get a youthful guy who's 26, 27 years old, can play either wing, traditionally a right wing, at a cap hit below $5 million, which was less than what Brian Rust's current cap hit is. So Brian Rust for Connor Garland, and you know, maybe a late round draft pick thrown in there as well. Out of those three players you mentioned, if I'm Kyle Dubas, I am personally taking Connor Garland.
I would have to, I mean, I like that take. First of all, I like Connor Garland. There's something about, I don't know if you've ever watched games where Connor's playing. There's something about the way that guy skates around and navigates the ice. He's just like this. He kind of has an odd stride. And I don't know if you ever saw it. There was like a viral photo of him, and he's down low next to the net, and he's looking for a tap, and he's choked up on his hockey stick like so much. And I'd seen him use that technique before. There's something about him. I just like him. He's just kind of this like little snake in the grass out there. He's effective. He's younger than Brian Rust. He makes less than him. Another thing I kind of have always thought, and maybe this is me thinking way too much about it, but Connor Garland's a Massachusetts, like a Boston, Massachusetts guy. And Mike Sullivan also is. I think, you know, maybe there's a little bit of bias towards, for some reason, I could just see Connor fitting into a system with Sullivan really well. I love that. All being said, I love Brian Rust, and I've loved the way he plays. Honestly, more than a few years ago now, but I was kind of shocked that he turned into Brian Rust, that is, turned into a top six player. I didn't really think that. Yeah, you as well. So yeah, I was kind of surprised he ended. He just works so well with Sid. I think that if you take Sid out of the equation, and I don't know if Gensel would need to be in the equation also, but if you take Sid out of it, I don't know if he's a top six player on the Penguins or any other team in the league. I don't know if he drives offense solo enough to be that. I think Brian Rust could be like the perfect third liner on like any team. What do you think?
It's hard because, I mean, look, I believe even without Sidney Crosby, Jake Gensel is one of the best pure goal scorers in the league. But with that said, of course it's not going to hurt when you have one of the best players of all time centering your line with Sidney Crosby. So is Brian Rust's success a byproduct of Sidney Crosby's greatness? The same argument could be had for Jake Gensel as well. Like you mentioned, and it still to this day eludes me how to describe how Brian Rust transformed his game from a mid-round draft pick. And he really, even before he came up to the NHL level and became, he was a bit player and started really contributing during those championship runs. And he's been an integral part ever since. Before he came up here with Mike Sullivan, I had no idea who he was. I didn't even know he existed. And it's just, between him, Gensel, Connor Sherry, I may be missing a couple of other of Tom Kuhnhackl,
Scott Wilson.
Yeah, another one. All of those guys that came up from Wilkes-Barre around the time that Mike Sullivan was promoted to the NHL head coach, I did not know any of those guys existed, to be quite honest with you. And I'm focused on the Pittsburgh Penguins, not the Wilkes-Barre Penguins. And at that time, I wasn't focused on the development of a bunch of mid to late round draft picks, because you assume mid to late round draft picks aren't really going to develop into bona fide top six forwards. So to see Brian Rust's transformation and Jake Gensel's transformation into premier top six forwards in the league, sure, like I said, it's never going to hurt when you have Evgeny Malkin or Sidney Crosby as your center. And that's always going to be the case. Point totals might be a little bit skewed because you have one of those two guys as your center. But at the same time, I'll end it by saying, take nothing away from the game that Brian Rust has developed for himself. And the same for Jake Gensel, because they have both proven to be integral parts of that top six with or without Crosby.
For sure. And I think, God, when I think of Rust and why it like stings to even bring up this hypothetical, I love Brian Rust, the Rusty Razor. Dude, the playoff runs, the back-to-backs, I mean, he really made his name for himself in the playoffs. I think in 2015-16, he had 6 goals, and then in 16-17, he had 17 goals, 6 goals and 3 assists, and then the next year, 7 goals and 2 assists. Like, he kind of, for being someone that, like you said, was a mid-round draft pick and we had never heard of before, and, you know, not really paying attention to the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, he kind of popped off and was clutch. Like, I think some of the timing of those goals that he scored, you know, it wasn't like these were blowout games where he was scoring. If I remember correctly, he had some like pretty big goals. But with all of that said, I think if we're looking to the future and making the team better in this hypothetical, I would 100% piggyback what Garrett said, and I'd probably go for Connor Garland. I think Connor Garland is a super intriguing winger out in Vancouver. I've always been curious too about when is a trade going to swing between the Penguins and JR out in Vancouver? Has it happened?
No, yet? It hasn't happened yet. I thought it was going to happen at this past trade deadline between Hextall and Rutherford, because at that point, I think the Canucks were having a fire sale, and really their season was just a disaster class, and they were selling off basically just about everything. I thought Connor Garland was going to be that guy that Hextall was going to go after, and it never materialized. But at this point, between Rutherford and Patrick Alvin, I would not be surprised if Kyle Dubas goes to one of those two over the next 6 to 9 months, whenever the trade deadline is, next March or whatever. And if the Canucks are struggling again and the Penguins are on the playoff bubble with a chance to make the dance again, then if the price is right, then come on down.
100%. Were you shaking in your boots that there was going to be a Miller? They were going to connect on JT Miller?
That's right. That's who it was. I couldn't think of the name. Yeah, I don't know how in the world the Penguins would have fit Miller under the salary cap unless the Canucks were retaining salary. And I don't think at the time the Canucks were interested in retaining any of the salary. But now it's like the JT Miller trade discourse and the rumors were so far removed from that now with the acquisition of Carlson that and how close the Penguins are up against the salary cap that I don't think it could even happen, even if they wanted it to.
No, not with his new contract kicking in. There's no way. I'm so glad that that didn't happen. At the time, I think when it was getting down to the trade deadline, I was like so desperate for like a playoff berth that I was just like, just do it. Just sell whatever you need to get that extra little bit of you know, he provides a little grit. So I would say a little bit of grit and a little bit of, and a lot of offense from a guy like him. And I was like, let's just do it. Sell your soul now. Let's make the playoffs. But looking at it now, getting Carlson, one of the trades that I'm glad never happened. All right, we'll move on here. Garrett assuming the role, continuing to assume the role here of Kyle Dubas. Kyle, you are closing in on signing Thomas Tatar to a PTO, but Thomas Tatar puts up the stop sign and he declares he doesn't want the PTO. He thinks his reputation and what he's accomplished in the league with all of that, he deserves a one year one way guaranteed contract. And you're into it. You want to add this extra bigger offensive winger to your roster, adding that depth, but you got to move some money out in order to fit him under the cap. I'm curious, who is out and why? Or are you passing on Tatar?
This may not be the answer you were anticipating, but if Thomas Tatar and my representatives reach a contract stalemate, I am letting him walk.
Wow.
And right now, given the Penguin salary cap situation, 1 year, $1 million, it could definitely work if you shuffle a couple of contracts and send a couple of guys down to the minors. I'm sure it could work. But I am not losing sleep over not signing Thomas Tatar. There are definite concerns about the scoring depth when it comes to the bottom six. I'm looking at a projected depth chart right now on Cap Friendly. So even with Jake Gensel's injury, let's say the season starts with Sidney Crosby, Brian Rust, and Riley Smith on the top line. Let's say Evgeny Malkin gets Ricard Raquel, and we'll say, according to Cap Friendly, Matt Nieto is the starting left winger alongside Evgeny Malkin. Maybe that could be Drew O'Connor as well. Drew O'Connor is on the third line, according to Cap Friendly, with Jeff Carter and Noel Achari. And the fourth line consists of, right now, Rem Pitlick, Lars Eller, and Vinny Hinostroza. Again, these are all Cap Friendly projections. This is not confirmed by the team in any way, shape, or form. That bottom six, and we knew this going into the season, it was going to be an emphasis on defense and limiting the amount of goals against. Where are you going to really find that offense in the bottom six? You could argue, and you would be justified in arguing, that you maybe won't get that offense from the bottom six. Maybe you have to rely too heavily on the top six scoring, Malkin, Rust, Gensel, Smith when he's healthy, all those guys. But if there's a contract impasse with a guy like Thomas Tatar, who still hasn't been signed to this point, and to my knowledge, he has not been given a PTO with any other team in the National Hockey League, I am not going to lose sleep over not having Thomas Tatar on my roster. I think Thomas Tatar would be an excellent addition to the team, and he would surely provide offense in a bottom six role, but he is not a game breaker. It's not a make or break that I need for my team. If I'm Kyle Dubas, looking at the roster I have on paper right now, I am comfortable with the team I have to start out. Now, that's not to say come American Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year, or if you want to go even further to the trade deadline, let's say they're not winning as many games as you think they should be, or your veteran stars look kind of tired and they've been carrying the offensive load. Then I will survey the landscape at that time and see what's available for a potential trade. but I'm not going to overexert myself, and I'm not going to lose sleep over maybe or maybe not having a guy like Thomas Tatar on my team.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
I like that answer. I think right now it's, I mean, this isn't Chell GM mode on easy. I think moving money out right now is just harder than it's maybe not ever been, because we've been in a, you know, we had COVID and we've been in some, teams have been cap strapped for years now, but it takes two to tango to get players on and off your roster. And I think that moving out someone for Thomas Tatar, of course I would love to have him on the team, but the trouble to try and move money out and make trades and potentially have to give up. I mean, I don't know. Would you have to give up somebody you really don't want to give up to add him? It's not, like I said, it's not Chell easy mode, GM mode on easy, where you can just pick a couple of fringe players that may or may not even see an NHL game and move them out and move in a player like him. I also have, I've been sitting on this theory also, that I think that the Penguins have long moved on from Thomas Tatar. I think that things got close for a second there when we kind of heard that that Thomas Tatar and Dubas were in talks. This kind of smells like a Lou Lamoriello thing. Like you never know who Lou signed until like pretty much like right before it's either camp starts or when players start showing up. I think that the Islanders have been looking for a little bit of offense. They have a little bit of trouble putting pucks in the net. And I'm thinking this kind of smells like maybe the Islanders have pounced on this guy. So my thoughts, I agree with Garrett that I think that if you get to a stalemate, I really like how young the team has gotten. I don't think that you're going to move heaven and earth to bring in an aging winger like Tatar. And have to really struggle to find the right guys to move out just to make this happen. I think the top six is great, and I think that the bottom six is much improved.
Yeah, just to put a bow on it, I'll agree. You won't have to do too much cap wrangling, too much of sending up and sending down. The roster the Penguins have now, I think, will be a competitive one. Are they the best team in the Eastern Conference? No, not by a long shot, in my opinion, at least. But they will be a vast improvement. That much I can almost guarantee. And at the very least, they will be entertaining to watch, which when I tune into a game at 7 or 7:30 at night on a Tuesday, that's what I want to be. I want to be entertained. Of course, I want my favorite team to win, but judging by what we had over the last, 2 years under Ron Hextall, how it became a chore to watch the Penguins, basically, I will take what has happened over the last 5 or so months with Kyle Dubas 8 days out of 7.
Agreed. Much improved roster, with or without Tatar. All right. So this is my third and final hypothetical here. So Garrett, also known as Kyle, you and Jason Spezza are chilling this Sunday. You're going to be dipping into your signing bonuses to throw massive coin on the Steelers game this weekend. Who do you like? Who are you taking, and why?
Oh boy. Who am I taking? Well, when I was not Kyle Dubas, when I was not playing the role of Kyle Dubas, I had this discussion with my best friend just last night. As we're recording this on Friday, the last night was the start of the NFL season, and we were talking about the Steelers game on Sunday. I told my friend that the 49ers would beat the Steelers 23-20. I am a natural pessimist when it comes to my Pittsburgh sports fandom. I am mentally and emotionally programmed to expect the worst result so that when the best result comes and the Steelers do upset the 49ers on Sunday, I can be even more pleasantly surprised and say, hell yeah, the Steelers beat the 49ers. They beat the one of the best defenses in the NFL last season. But as of right now, if I'm putting money on that game, I will say the 49ers will win it, and it will be a close game. It will still be a close game. I don't think a lot of offense is going to be scored between both teams. Both teams are still going to try, and it'll be a couple of weeks before I think you see really most offenses around the NFL at full speed. So I'll say I'm going to keep what I said at the start, and I'll say 23-20 San Francisco. As much as it pains me as a Steelers fan, my pessimistic nature gets the best of me, and I'm going with the 49ers.
Well, as far as my take on this, I mean, let's just be honest. I guess in this, I'm Kyle Dubas. So, Garrett, enlighten me as Kyle Dubas. Who is the quarterback again for the Steelers?
The quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, according to my research, is former University of Pittsburgh quarterback Kenneth Pickett.
And how do we feel about Kenneth Pickett in Pittsburgh?
Well, the thing about Kenny Pickett, especially if you have an allegiance to the Pitt Panthers, like so many people in Pittsburgh do, is, through hell or high water, they're going to support Kenny Pickett. And I'll take my Kyle Dubas shoes off for this, and I'll speak as Garrett, and I'll say that my collegiate allegiance lies with the Penn State Nittany Lions, not with the Pitt Panthers. So seeing a former Pitt product lead the Steelers to the promised land, really, Kenny, if he can win us a Super Bowl, I don't care if you come from coastal Carolina, Hawaii, or anywhere in between. As long as you can win me a Super Bowl, I don't care where you went to college. But because Kenny Pickett played 4 years at Pitt, because he was drafted by the Steelers, the Panthers and the Steelers share the same stadium, some of the same equipment, same rooms at Acrisure Stadium. There's going to be a natural romance between Kenny Pickett and a lot of those fans. So everybody wants Kenny to succeed, and I want Kenny to succeed. I want the Penguins, we talk about the Penguins too much. I want the Steelers to get back into the postseason this year and hopefully challenge the Ravens for the AFC North Championship.
Okay. Well, I think it's all Steelers this weekend. I think that Kenneth Pickett is going to squash Brock Purdy. I see here that is his name George Kittle?
George Kittle, yes. I am not sure if he's playing or not. He is the premier tight end for the 49ers.
So I see that he's questionable with a groin, and as we saw, I don't know if you saw last night with Kansas City not having Kelce. Is it Travis Kelce? Not having Travis Kelce. I mean, they lost the game, not by a whole lot. They, I believe it was 21-20. And I don't know if George Kittle plays is as big as an impact as Travis Kelce, but I'm picking the Steelers.
The good thing is, for those who are listening to this right now, we have an eternal optimist in Snail, and it meshes so well with the eternal pessimist that I have become in my rotten old age of 25. I've just come to expect the worst out of sports. So like I said, when the good things happen and championships are won, I can feel better about myself after the fact.
Eternal optimism. I like that. So I've mentioned this a little bit. I haven't tuned into a ton of football for a couple of years. The Seahawks, I couldn't stand Russell Wilson. But this year, I'm watching football again, boys. Like, I am going to be watching games. I'm going to be tuning in every Sunday or Monday or Thursday. And my fandom is up for grabs this year. I am not attached to the Seahawks by any means. I am going to be riding the Steelers. I'm going to be cheering for Kenny Pickett and my man Mitch Trubisky. Go Steelers.
Look at that. We have a Pacific Northwest native in Seahawks country saying his allegiance is up for grabs and he could potentially be cheering for an NFL team. I don't know what the distance is between Seattle and Pittsburgh, so I'm just going to say 3,000 miles away. I don't think it's 3,000 miles. That seems like a larger distance than the distance between Seattle and Pittsburgh. But for the sake of me not knowing the actual distance, I'll say, you know, he's 3,000 miles away and his allegiance is up for grabs. Can the Steelers do right by Snail and convert him into a fan of the black and gold? There's a thing that we do here in Pittsburgh. I'm speaking as Garrett again. There are a couple of traditions. Well, we have a lot of traditions, especially when it comes to the football team. There is a song that is played at Acrisure Stadium, formerly Heinz Field. The song is called Renegade, and it's from the band Styx, STYX. This song, Renegade, is the equivalent of the United States national anthem for Steelers fans. Renegade is played in the stadium when the Steelers need a big third down stop to try and swing momentum, or they're driving down the field like they're on the 25-yard line and they have to get into field goal range to win the game. Renegade is one of those traditions that I know Snail won't be in Pittsburgh, but I know he utilizes YouTube and watches a lot of highlights. So I'm telling you now, your homework for whenever we record next, whether it's the mailbag or another one of these episodes where we try and figure out what shoes Kyle wears, I want you to YouTube Renegade Pittsburgh Steelers on YouTube, and that will give you a glimpse into what life is like as a Steelers fan.
I will. I had no idea that was a thing. I'm super naive to it, but I'm going to check it out and see if I can witness the madness that happens over. And you said it's not called Heinz Field anymore?
It was called Heinz Field for the longest time. We had massive Heinz ketchup bottles adorned at the top of the stadium. And it was great because Heinz was a local Pittsburgh, recognizable Pittsburgh brand that the naming rights went up for grabs last year, the year before, and some weird insurance company called Acrisure ended up taking the naming rights, and now everybody hates the name of the stadium. It's called Acrisure Stadium instead of Heinz Field. Yeah, it's corporatized.
That's so dumb.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's like, why even do? No one wants your name over Heinz Field, I'm sure. Like, yeah. I mean, even just like listen to the, like, even when they're placing their bid to take the naming rights, there's no way that they're even hyped on it. Like, there's no way they can be like, that has like a nice ring to it. Heinz Field, Pittsburgh, Heinz Ketchup, Heinz Condiments or whatever. That's a shame.
I still call it Heinz Field, and I'm going to, it's funny. People who are older than me, my parents' age and those before, they always have a thing. The prior stadium before Heinz Field was built was called Three Rivers Stadium. And I'm sure there are people older than me, much older than me, who still call the stadium in Pittsburgh Three Rivers Stadium instead of Heinz Field. Well, I will continue to call it Heinz Field. That's what I grew up with, and that's what I'm going to continue to call it.
I will back that as a Pittsburgh podcaster. I will not let that tradition die. Also, just quickly back to the hypothetical here with Kyle and Jason Spezza throwing massive coin on the game. Like, do you think that they like care about, like, do you think that coming here, like, if I'm Kyle, am I coming in and being like, go Steelers, or is my allegiance still with the Toronto Argonauts of the CFL, who are having a hell of a season, by the way?
I know precisely zero things about Canadian football to the CFL. But considering that Kyle Dubas is an Ontario native, I don't know if he would. I don't know if he would convert. I mean, maybe he doesn't have an NFL allegiance. Maybe his allegiance is up for grabs, just like yours. I just don't know. It would be amazing to see Kyle Dubas waving a terrible towel at a Steelers game, though.
Oh, it's got to happen if he cares. But I mean, maybe he's a Bills fan.
Oh no, he could be too.
He's close to the border.
Yeah,
those dudes up there in Canada. I feel like it's either like Detroit Lions or it's Green Bay Packers or it's Buffalo.
Yeah, depending on the location of where you are in Canada, I would not be surprised if that were to be the case. Oh, I hope now that you said that and you spoke it into existence, I hope that's not the case.
Well, if I'm Kyle, like I am in this instance right now, I am getting Kenny Pickett's jersey tattooed on my inner thigh, and I'm finding myself a terrible towel, and I'm wearing it as a cape this Sunday as I dive into a plate of wings and probably lots of beer or something like that.
Good, because Kyle is definitely going to need it before the preseason kicks off later this month and then the regular season.
Yep. Well, that's all the hypotheticals I had for you. This was fun. Thanks again, Garrett, for allowing me to keep this hypothetical segment going.
Well, we're two episodes into this new segment called Mile in Kyle's Shoes. I'd be curious to know, when I post this, I'm going to post this to social media, and I'm going to go look at some of the numbers, some of the analytics afterwards. I'd be curious to know what the listener base is for this A Mile in Kyle's Shoes. And we're two episodes in. We still do not have a definitive answer to what kind of shoes Kyle Dubas wears. And like Snail mentioned, they could be Gucci loafers. They could be 50-year-old New Balance dad shoes with high white tube socks. They could be flip-flops. Or he could be bare feet trotting around through PPG Paints Arena. We just don't know. We just don't know. And the thing is that, you know, for however long we take this segment, how many episodes we do of this, it will be my personal mission to find out what kind of shoes Kyle Dubas wears. And because I create this content for you, the loyal listener of the Skating Penguin Network, it will be my duty to find out what kind of shoes Kyle Dubas wears. Snail, do you have anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
No, but I think it would actually be like, it would be a huge win and a huge get for us to get some sort of like somebody within the organization to just discreetly and anonymously send us a screenshot or a little snapshot of Kyle Dubas's shoes in some sort of in whatever setting. It doesn't have to be even at PPG Paints. If somebody, it was paparazzi out there, want to help us out. Wouldn't that be amazing if we got that?
We did, this was years ago. We did have I believe her name's Andy Perlman. Yeah, she's the main social media person for the Penguins. She is absolutely lovely, a tremendously, tremendously nice human being. We did have her on. She's still with the Penguins. So if there is one person who may be able to help us out, Andy may be able to solve this mystery and figure out what kind of shoes Kyle Dubas does wear. But, until then, it's going to have to remain a mystery. And until next time, until we have more hypotheticals to discuss, for Snail, I have been Garrett Behanna. Thank you so much to listening to the Skating Penguin Network, and we will talk to you again very soon.